in the region. Hendry, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Yes, no worries. It's my pleasure to participate in this discussion.
Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic, Hendry. Looking at Indonesia, why do we see marginalization of the queer community to such a high degree?
Okay, so I have to highlight different yet interconnected elements which shape the marginalization of LGBT people in Indonesia. So first, since 1998, after the collapse of Suharto's new regime, we have seen the rise of political Islam in our political sphere, and they often exploit and use issues of sexuality as a way to consolidate their political power and to gain more public support. So that's number one. But also the internationalization of LGBT identities and rights, for example, since 2006, and evidenced by the enactment of the Yogyakarta Principles, as well as the push to same-sex marriage in different countries, particularly the U.S. in 2015, also gives a political capital for this, let's say, political Islam to spread hatred against LGBT groups and politicize LGBT groups, LGBT issues, as an outcome, as probably we have seen in 2016, there was a huge debate in public fear all of a sudden about LGBT, and media, Indonesian press suddenly talked about LGBT. All state and non-state actors talk about LGBT as well. And at the same time, media always frame LGBT issues in an extremely negative framing. As such, there are a lot of misleading discourses surrounding sexuality, homosexuality, as well as LGBT.
So looking at the effects that this has on the community itself, I mean, we talked about the health issues there in the introduction. That's a pretty obvious health issue, you would have to say, around a quarter of the community suffering from HIV and the like. So what kind of very negative effects do we see this marginalization and this politicization having on the queer community in Indonesia?
Okay, so I have to say first, there has been shrinking in terms of queer spaces. I mean, queer spaces and communities are very important for public health intervention, particularly the ones related to HIV and AIDS, because that's the way to reach out communities and queer people who are not out of the closet. So, of course, spaces and community is very important, but when there is increasing policing attempts, so it's more difficult for queer people to organize or to come out in a particular space. They don't have private space anymore, for example, or communitarian-based space. Second is with the increasing policing of non-normative sexualities, of course, any discussions related to sexualities becomes very difficult because people are scared. That's number one. Number two is any attempt to discuss about sexualities or any attempts even to bring condoms, for example, can create problems, as the Human Rights Watch report also highlights. For example, some health workers argue that bringing condom can be used or can be interpreted by police as an evidence of promoting sex, promoting free sex, or promoting sexuality outside of wedlock, which can be detrimental to that individual.
You know, one very specific example from most recently, we saw the United Nations Health Agency decide that transgenderism will no longer be considered a mental illness. Mm-hmm. Now, it's intriguing to me, based on what you were saying previously about the reaction to issues gaining more prominence around the rest of the world, such as the 2015 marriage equality in the United States. It seems like changes like this, whether it's the UN, whether it's other countries doing this thing, might actually have a negative impact because the politicization is deliberately moving in the opposite direction based on what you've said.
Yes. That's one possibility, and I've seen the impact so far. But also, the most important thing that I really want to highlight as well is that there are always discrepancies between international policies and also local practices. So, for example, now, although the UN has declassified transgender from mental illness, but if you see at the local practices by, let's say, health actors in Indonesia or also or by society, they still obviously see transgender as something deviant. So in a way, this international policies cannot easily be translated into local contexts, which carry different cultural contexts and different historical contexts as well.
It is quite unfortunate. We know that political movements do shape public opinion. So when I mentioned before the public opinion that 26% of Indonesian respondents had a negative attitude towards gay and transgender people, this is not necessarily the politics are a reflection of people's beliefs, but people's beliefs are often a reflection of the politics. We've seen the same thing here in Australia. So how do you think the situation could best change?
Well, to be honest, it's a very difficult question to answer at the moment, but I've seen a lot of activists, a lot of different organizations have been working to counter misleading discourses surrounding homosexuality, transgender, and or LGBT issues. But again, it takes time, and also I have to say that the movements are still are still growing, so it's not a huge and it's quite dispersed. So, of course, it's a big task to carry forward these attempts. But at this stage, I would say it's still possible, but it just takes time.
And just finally, Hendry, so far Australia has donated 1.3 million for HIV response in Indonesia. Looking at the wider community here in Australia, obviously Australia has a very strong, very passionate queer community. Is there anything you feel Australia could be doing to help the individuals, help the community in Indonesia?
Okay, so first, because, you know, as you might have aware, any support or intervention from any Western countries can always be framed as Western intervention to national sovereignty or local politics. So it is also a very tricky situation because this can easily be politicized again by anti-LGBT groups, which always frame LGBT as a war between Indonesia and the West, for example, or LGBT as a Western intervention. But it's still possible if Australia would help in the queer community in Indonesia by, you know, by also framing the issues, not using a merely human rights frame, but probably might be more effective if we use, like, if we strategically frame this issue using, like, an immediate concern of community, for example, public health or HIV prevention or poverty reduction, anti-violence. So in a way, we try to avoid the language of individual rights or human rights or sexual rights, but we use different framing like education, health, and as I said, poverty reduction, because of course, as you can see, many warrior or transgender women are still economically disadvantaged, and what is more important for them sometimes are something that is immediate, like access to public services, access to social services, access to ID cards, which can be solved quite quickly if we work together.
Hendry, absolute pleasure getting you on the program. Really appreciate you joining us on this one.